joined by Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling, based out of Raleigh, publicpolicypolling.com, their website. You can find more numbers and analysis on Twitter at PPP Polls as well. And they have just come out with a new survey of North Carolina voters, so we'll get a sense of where things stand. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So let's actually start, and we usually start with the presidential race, but let's start with the U.S. Senate race, because since we talked, a lot has happened. Cal Cunningham's affair was made public. He's apologized, I think, three different times already publicly for that. Tom Tillis's campaign trying to take advantage of it. You're seeing that reflected in new advertising. But does any of this have any impact at all on the actual race?
The answer is, so far, no. We did a poll Sunday and Monday, so the allegations had broken Friday night and had been all over the news Saturday and then Sunday morning in the newspaper. So it was sort of, we were sort of getting people's first reaction to what they thought about this. And what we found was that Cal Cunningham was still up by 6 points, 48 to 42, which is pretty consistent with where the polls on the race have been over the last few months. And we asked if people had heard about the scandal. 58% of voters in the state said that yes, they had, and 58% said that they did not care about the scandal, that it was not going to affect their vote one way or the other. And among the people who did say it was going to affect their vote, it was pretty much exclusively Trump voters who probably would not have voted for Cunningham anyway. Obviously, since we did the poll Sunday and Monday, there's been more news about this, and I don't know if that might have the potential to change things, but it might not, because one thing that was really interesting in the poll is that we definitely found that Cal Cunningham's image had taken a hit. We've usually found him at about a plus 15 net favorability rating, and on this poll he was at minus 2, so about 17 points worse than he's been. But that comes out looking pretty good for Cunningham when compared to Tom Tillis, who's at minus 20 net favorability rating. So even though this episode seems to have cost Cunningham some popularity, he's still not nearly as unpopular as Tillis is.
And that's fascinating right there, that someone like in the heat of an election with, you know, election day less than a month away, can take a very sudden 17-point hit in their popularity rating, and it doesn't seem to affect people's votes at all. Is there a previous parallel for that?
The 2016 presidential election. It's actually kind of amazing, the parallels between the timing of Cunningham's little incident and the Access Hollywood tape coming out for Trump. In both cases, those stories hit on a Friday night, 25 days away from Election Day. And as we saw, Trump's case, where his incident, I think, was much more egregious than Cunningham's, probably to most people, at least in terms of the stuff he was caught saying on tape. Trump ended up doing better than where he was in the race 25 days out. He took a little bit of an instantaneous hit, and then he just picked right back up and ended up doing better than he'd been doing before. And it wasn't because people liked Trump, but they liked Clinton less. And it's a very similar situation in the North Carolina Senate race. People might not be as enthusiastic about Cunningham now as they were a week ago, but they still might like him better than Tillis. Tillis is just uniquely unpopular. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. My guess, with the asterisk that this is if no more really bad shoes drop for Cunningham, related to this, my guess is that he'll hold on. He'll win by less than he would have won if this hadn't happened. I still think he'll win. And the other thing related to this to think about, which you sort of alluded to in your opening, so many North Carolinians have already voted. I think it's possible that Cunningham loses among people who vote after this whole thing came out, but he has such a huge lead in the bank right now because so many people have voted so early and it's so overwhelmingly Democrats doing it, that he may already have a large enough lead in the bank on people who have already voted that at least reduces to some extent the chance to which this can really hurt him.
What do we know about the 10% who are undecided there?
They so th- th- this is actually another interesting aspect of it. We've been talking a lot this year about how I expected the Senate race to tighten from some polls where Cunningham was up by like 8 or 10 points because the undecideds were structurally Republican-leaning. And on this poll where Cunningham was up by 6, the undecideds were no longer structurally Republican-leaning. So the race is tightening some, and people will attribute that to the sex scandal. I actually think it might be the Supreme Court seat more than the sex scandal that's causing the tightening, because we are seeing some of those Trump-loving, Tillis-reluctant voters coming over to Tillis. And I think the Supreme Court seat's as good of an explanation for that as anything.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, again, publicpolicypolling.com, the website, more numbers, at PPP Polls on Twitter, and you can go there to get the link to this survey, which we're talking about right now. And these are new numbers for North Carolina that just came out earlier this week. So turning to the presidential race, where do things stand?
Joe Biden has a 4-point lead in the state, 50-46. I think that matches the biggest lead we've had for him all year. One thing that was really interesting was we asked people if they watched the debate, and if they did, we asked them if it changed their mind about who to vote for. And only 6% of people who watched the debate said it changed their mind about who to vote for, but Biden was winning those voters by 50. So where we've generally had him up by like a couple points, I think sort of the sequence of events last week, may have sort of structurally improved Biden's standing in the race by a couple points relative to where it had been, both in North Carolina and nationally. A +4 for Biden in North Carolina is a little better than we've seen for him over the most of the course of the year. And he's also posting some of his best national polls of the entire year this week. So the combination of Biden winning the debate, if nothing else, because Trump did so bad, and then Trump getting coronavirus and that sort of just being such a symbol of Trump's mishandling of the virus in many voters' minds. I mean, I don't want to get too bold and just declare that the election's over 26 days out, because we still know that crazy things could happen. But I guess what I would say is something crazy is going to have to happen for Biden not to win, because there's not that much time left, and his poll leads are just getting bigger, both in this state and across the entire country.
No, it is 2020. You know something crazy is going to happen. It's just a question of which way it goes. So you mentioned the national picture also kind of moving towards Biden. What else are we seeing in other key states?
Yeah, the national polling average this week now has Biden up by about 10 nationally. Where for most of the year it's been 6 or 7, sort of speaking to that general movement we're seeing of the race moving two or three points in Biden's direction. And people always say, well, the national popular vote doesn't matter. Hillary won the national popular vote and still lost the Electoral College. I think that Trump could lose the popular vote by as much as 3 points and still win the Electoral College. But I don't think he can lose the popular vote by 5 points and still win the Electoral College. And I certainly don't think he can lose the popular vote by 10 points and still win the Electoral College. And the swing state polling has been very bad for Trump this week as well. The most likely tipping point states in the election are Florida and Pennsylvania. And Biden is now pretty consistently moving towards leading by 7 or so in Pennsylvania, leading by 5 or so in Florida. One piece of analysis this week that is telling is that even if the polls are just as off as they were in 2016, and I don't think they will be because pollsters have done a lot to correct for mistakes that were made in 2016, but even if the polls were just as off as they were in 2016 this year, Biden's up by so much in the key states now that he would win anyway. And one poll that we just got hot out of the field within the last couple hours that I think really sort of sums up where the presidential race is right now, is that we have Biden leading by a point in Texas. And obviously there's no universe where Texas would be part of Biden's path to 270 electoral votes. It's more like his 400th electoral vote than his 270th electoral vote. But the fact that Biden can be ahead by a point in Texas, that Texas is much closer than Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and those kinds of states that are going to be the tipping point states in the election, it shows that at least as of 26 days out, The most competitive states are not the states that are going to determine who wins the Electoral College. The most competitive states are places like Texas and Georgia and Iowa and Ohio that are more like icing on the cake kind of states for Biden than states that he actually needs to win to get an Electoral College majority.
Speaking with Tom Jensen and going back to that shift towards Biden in the last week or so, even if it's just a couple of points, does that surprise you at all? Because we've had so many different variations of the same conversation over the last, 6 months that all of this crazy stuff has happened in 2020 and it hasn't affected the polls at all. But in the last week, we're seeing a movement. Are you surprised by that?
A little bit. And, you know, we certainly knew that if there was ever going to be any movement, it would have to come from people who voted for Trump the last time around, because he was already sort of doing as bad as he could possibly do with everybody else. And that is what we're seeing. We've had quite a few polls this week where Biden is winning 10% to 12% of the 2016 Trump vote, where before it was pretty unusual to see that at more than like 6% or 7% in a poll. And this is particularly happening in well-educated areas. One poll that was really eye-popping for me this week was in St. Louis County, Missouri, which is very, you know, sort of the suburbs of St. Louis City. 20% of people who voted for Trump the last time around were voting for Biden this time around. And sort of in that vein, in our home state of Michigan, Oakland County has been always viewed as sort of very politically competitive territory, but maybe a little bit leaning to the right, if anything. There's private Republican polls even out there showing Biden winning Oakland County by 25 points. And I think the margins that Biden's going to end up putting up in places like Wake County and Mecklenburg County this year in North Carolina are just going to be astounding. I think Biden will win Wake County by somewhere between 30 and 40 points. As recently as 2004, George W. Bush won Wake County. I mean, that's just an amazing transformation in one of the two most populous counties in the state. So obviously it's not a lot of Trump voters jumping ship to get it from being 6% or 7% to 10% or 11%, but we are seeing that some in the last week just decided that they had had enough.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, and as we wrap up this conversation, getting back to the North Carolina survey from earlier this week, other significant numbers that you're seeing there. We've talked about the Senate and the presidential race already. I know the gubernatorial race is there, too.
Yeah, the governor's up by 12 points, and he's actually expanding his lead. Over the summer, when we would poll the governor's race every week, he was usually up by 7 or 8 points. He was always in good shape, but it was in single digits for the most part, and now we're seeing him up by double digits. And I have a couple theories about that. One is I think the contrast between how Cooper and North Carolina have handled COVID and how Trump has handled COVID have made Cooper come out looking pretty good. Like, he's really provided responsible leadership and helped get the state to a better point where it would otherwise be. And I also think that the tack Dan Forrest has taken on COVID just is not a winning strategy. You know, the sort of premise being that we're taking COVID too seriously and there should be less rules and we shouldn't take it so seriously, that is not where the public is. The public very much stands with how the governor has handled these issues. And one thing that's kind of interesting is that over the summer, Forrest had a positive favorability rating, and now we're pretty consistently finding him with a negative favorability rating. So what Forrest needed was for his voters got to know him, for them to like him and decide to vote for him. Instead, what's happened is the more voters have gotten to know Forrest, the less they've liked him.
PublicPolicyPolling.com for more numbers and find more analysis as well as numbers on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.